Atul Khatri is one of the country's most respected stand-up comics, and most people know about his story, how he transitioned from the world of business and IT into becoming a full-time stand-up comic. And yes, we definitely touched upon his story in this podcast, but this was one of my favorite conversations. That's one of the big criticisms we have with the Ranveer Show, that it becomes too one-sided. Now, that's not something I've done consciously. I'm just a curious dude. But you know what? With Atul Khatri, it was a two-way conversation, and I feel he's one of those rare people from that generation, born in the 1960s, who can talk to people who are born in the 90s and the 2000s. He comes down to our level in terms of age, in terms of mindset, and has conversations. And when there's two generations that are exchanging ideas and thoughts, that's one of the most stimulating kinds of conversations that you'll ever come across. And that's what I'm trying to give you through this episode. Everything from politics, the nature of comedy, the nature of taking offense on social media, and so much more about how the world of media has evolved, about how Atul Khatri's reality has evolved. This one was an eye-opener for me in many aspects, and I hope it does the same for you. Before we begin this episode, I just want to highlight that the clips of this episode are up on our third YouTube channel, The Ranveer Show Clips. And I also want to highlight that my new Social Media 101 course is now live on the Graphy app. So if you want to build your own social media business, your own online empire, or any business in the 2020s and 2030s, keep in mind social media will have to be the base of that business. It just makes things a lot easier. That's what I'm trying to give you through my Social Media 101 course. Check it out on Graphy. You can find it on your App Store, on your Play Store. That's Graphy. Check it out. Search for my course. And for now, enjoy Atul Khatri on The Ranveer Show. Atul Khatri, welcome to The Ranveer Show.
Thank you, Ranveer, to The Ranveer Show.
Yeah. One of my big criticisms about this show recently has been that I've become too serious in life.
Okay.
Yeah, because I feel ki the show is a reflection of what I'm going through in life, at that phase when I've recorded. So one of my very close friends said that you have to bring Atul Khatri and Jose Covaco to your show. So I just want to say that every time I meet you, you have a very different energy. Like, then people have met in the media industry. Then, like, generally the stand-up comedy space. Or generally people I meet on a day-to-day basis, very, very different energy.
Okay.
So do you feel that about yourself? Do you feel like somewhere you stand apart from the crowd?
In terms of stand-up comedy, I think yes. I have a lot of energy. I mean, as a person, I'm very hyper. I have a lot of energy. And like even at home, my daughter said, Papa just cool down. Like, you know, so I don't know. It's always been there, you know. Right. I think somewhere inside, I still feel I'm young, even though I'm 52 years old. So
yeah.
That energy, I think, comes from there. And in fact, and some of the comedians who I shortly interact with also, like, you know, off stage and in the green room and all, you know, I'm probably the guy who's, they don't feel I'm old enough. So I think it's a good positive energy. I think it's a good space to be in.
I have the same thing to say about you. Like, when someone asked me about this particular episode, I said that I'm going to ask him all the things I wish to ask my parents, but I probably can't. I feel I can talk to you about anything.
Yeah.
But let's begin with your OG story.
Okay.
What exactly were you doing before stand-up? Because there is confusion about this. Some people say you're a CEO. Yeah. Some people say you had your own businesses.
Yeah.
So what's the truth?
So there was an IT company in Bombay, K-Tech Computers. It's still there. It was me, my brother, and some other people. And so I was a director. So I was the CEO of the company. So I got out of engineering way back, late 80s. Then I worked outside, and then I came into this company, and I was running the sales and service part. We used to sell computers, networks, servers, you know, Cisco networks and high-end. We used to maintain networks and computers, infrastructure for a lot of high clients, like 200 computers, 400 computers, maintaining the servers and the networks across India. So I had a good, nice team. So I did that for close to 25 years. And so, yes, that was what I was doing prior to me getting into comedy or trying to sort of... at the age of 44, I decided to get into, try something. I never thought I'll want to leave it. It started as a, you could say, as a bucket list. It could start as a, as my wife would call it, midlife crisis, trying to do something else. And but then I started enjoying it so much that after 4 years, after starting it, I quit that and got full-time into stand-up comedy.
Got it. I'm going to come back to your story again.
Yeah.
But you mentioned this word called midlife crisis. It's something that's always intrigued me a lot.
Yeah.
So because you're a stand-up comic, your job is to observe people.
Yeah.
So when you're observing your friends, what is this midlife crisis made up of? Like, what happens? And
I think...
And what is it? Could you explain the ABCs of it?
So I think, you know, in our generation... a lot of us soon after college, there was a lot of pressure to get into work, business and things like that. So I think when I say midlife is, you know, 40s, in your 40s, you're typically, that's a midlife. You know, you live up to 70, 80. So 40 is really the midpoint. That's, I think that's where the mid comes from. And I think that's when you start realizing that, hey, you spent 20, 25 years doing, you know, just running around trying to set up, you know, your work, your children, your family. And that's when it hits you, hey, there was no, you know, now it's now or never. At least for me, it was that. So somewhere at the age of 43, 44, I started feeling that, hey, there's more to life than just this. You know, I can't be doing this for the next 20, 30 years, just running around, you know, trying to please my employees, the government, the taxes, my clients. You know, somewhere it has to be something for your own personal also has to be. There has to be a different aspect to you, which is your personal growth, you know. I mean, you can't then at the age of 65, 70, when you're retired, and that really should really bother me. When I think of it now, that should really bother me that at the age of 70, 75, when I'm, you know, retired and maybe can't do anything more, I wouldn't say, oh my God, at least I should have tried this, you know. If you don't try, then you have to be blamed. But if you try and you don't succeed, then it's okay. So it was actually that. And to be honest with you, my wife really egged me on. She said, hey, why don't you, I can see. And what happens in an IT job, there's a great burnout. Because it is actually 24/7, 365. You know, when you're maintaining, at least in my case, you're maintaining people's very high-end critical servers and all. You're going to call at 3 a.m. in the morning, hey, my server is down somewhere in this, you know, arrange for some resources to set it out. And then you have to do it. And so it was like, and we were working actually in terms of work hours. It used to be like from morning 8:30, say like 8:30, 9, 10 in the night and 7 days a week, 6 days a week. Sunday used to be typically an off, but 6 days a week. So there's a lot of burnout which happens. You know, continuously there are targets to achieve. There are employee salaries to be paid, you know. And running a business in India, I think anywhere else, a small, medium-sized business is extremely challenging, you know, in terms of the buck stops here, you know. You can't. So... yeah, unless you're a crook and, you know, run away with people's money, that's a different thing. But so, yeah, so I think that's what, and egged by my wife, I said, no, I have to try something, you know. So it was a planned decision. Let me try something else rather than just doing my work day in and day out. So, yeah, I started from there. So I think midlife crisis really hits you there because there's a time your children are growing up and, you know, more responsibility will come up. So it's trying to, you know, probably satisfy some of your inner needs somewhere that, hey, you know, let's look inward and say that how can you do something for yourself?
What were you at 27 versus you at this age where you, you know, decided to take this call? What was the difference in your mindset?
At 27, I think I was more focused towards my work. It was full work, how to increase your business sales, how to, you know, keep your clients happy, how to, you know, just manage things around. So I think those at that time, the goals were very different. Now at the age of 44, when I started doing comedy, it was a very different state of mind where you said, okay, this is going on. You've done it well. And till the time I left my work, we were highly profitable. It was not that it was a dying business and I wanted to get out of it. We were doing well. I'm a Sindhi businessman. We make money even out of, you know, out of a loss. So yeah, I was... so at 44, it was the same feeling. I mean, I was still doing well, but there's some realization started coming that, hey, I'm getting old now, you know, and now you have to, that's when your gray start coming in, your eyesight goes. Typically at 40, you know, your reading glasses come on. So you know that, yeah, some changes is happening. So it's either now or never.
What about all those stand-up comics you met when you began? What was the difference in mindset there? Because I feel age adds a lot of layers to your head. And stand-up comics, just the nature of being a stand-up comic is that you're constantly adding layers to your head.
Yeah.
So do you feel like the younger stand-up comics are very different from you, or are they very different from you even today?
So yeah, some of them are, I mean, different, because if I look at a comedian who's like 23, 24, you know, he's very young.
Mm.
You know, he's brilliant on stage. His writing is impeccable. Everything is perfect. But there is the business side to it. There is the, you know, somewhere, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of comedians. There's a lot of fear in their head also. And especially today when I meet a lot of kids, na, like your age. How old are you? Sorry.
27.
Oh, yeah. So perfect. So your age, there's a lot of, you know, fears. Shit, I'll have to get married. I'll have to find somebody, get married, have children. Then the children have to go to school, arrange a nanny for them. They have to go. There's a big burden. And so a lot of kids I'm meeting now say, I don't want to get married. Mm. You know, that's the first thing.
Mm.
So they feel that it's a lot of responsibilities are getting added, especially in a world now which is getting so polarized, which is becoming fairly negative, and it's becoming so, you know, difficult. That's what it feels. But coming back to your question, when I met these comedians, obviously they were young, they were carefree, you know, free-spirited, as I would call it. You know, some of them were just come out of college, they're just writing, for them just sitting at home whole day long and then coming in the night to a comedy. That was the thing. For me, it was like, I used to work in the morning from 8:30 to 6:30, and at workplace, carry my jeans, t-shirt, change, rush into my office toilet at 6:37, you know, change into these, remove my shirt, tie, jacket, get into these cool clothes and go to some pub or some club to perform, you know.
Mm.
I mean, I have a joke. Every night I used to feel like, you know, as I'm Clark Kent, you know, rushing into the toilet, changing into Superman and going out to save the world. You know?
So, wow.
So, yeah. So, I think that was a difference where, but genuinely, I learned a lot from these people. You know, it's not that, I mean, I give credit to every young person because it has taught me so much, you know. I somehow feel it's a new lease of life for me. I did something for 25 years, which is a, you know, good chunk of my lifetime, maybe one third of my lifetime I did in this IT. But I had a, you know, you're running a different orbit. You have your ecosystem of your clients, your suppliers, you know, that others. Now you jump out of that planet, get onto a different planet, ekdam fresh, where now you are hanging out with young comedians, writing a creative job, you know, going to comedy clubs, performing across the world. Very different issues, very different ecosystem altogether. So I'm privileged that way that I got a chance, at least in a lifetime, to, you know, pursue two different, extremely, you know, very different environments.
Mm. But what do you see that's starkly different about this generation? Like people my age, what do you think is great and what do you also think is a little messed up?
I think what is amazing, great, you guys don't think too much of the future. I don't know. I mean, it would be very individual, but I think it's a very nice thing. It's a very the Uber model that I need not buy a car. I have an Uber. I need not buy a house. I can rent it out. I need not, you know, you have 10,000 in your account. Chalo, let's go for a, you know, trip to Lonavala for the weekend.
Mm.
I have money till Tuesday. We'll earn more money. So for our generation, it was more of savings and always protecting the future, because that's what, you know, my parents taught me. Like, it's always about saving, planning your future, seeing that you have those mutual funds and all. What if one day nothing happens, you have something to, which is also good in a way. So that's other thing which I would like to tell people is to please, you know, like I should always tell comedians that what happens in a comedy, you know, an open micer comes, he does very well for three consecutive open mics. And then before the fourth open mic, he quits his job. Suppose he has a job. He's saying, this is my passion. This is my calling. And then fifth, sixth open mic doesn't do well, suddenly doesn't get the followers. And then, you know, finally you need money to pay your bills, to, you know, survive. Unless you have a rich father who'll, you know, fund you for the rest of your life, you require all this to sustain. So I always say, you know, be very calculated in your approach. And that's, I get a lot of times comedians, young comedians, sir, what should I do? And I, you know, I mean, some of the parents have spoken to me. My son is saying that I want to leave my steady job, which gives him a good 40,000-50,000 rupees. And so I discussed with the comedian. I've had this discussion. I said, listen, why do you want to leave your job? You know, it's something you think, no, my boss doesn't allow me to do it. I said, wait for 6 months more. See, weigh your pros and cons. If for like a sustained 6, 7, 8 months, you're earning enough money from this passion of yours, which can sustain you, and you're confident you're doing well, and you really want to this, get into this for a lifetime, then jump, you know, then take this decision.
Yeah.
Because comedy, even though it may, you know, seem very easy, it may seem very fun and it seems very spontaneous, it's a lot of hard work which goes into writing jokes, you know, especially in today's time when you have WhatsApp jokes hitting you, you know, 200 jokes per every minute is hitting you on your phone and social media and memes and so many things. And so many such creators are coming now. You have to rise above that, because when you go on stage, when people come to pay you money, they have to say, oh my God, it's worth paying him. Other than ye to joke sun liya, internet pe kya fayda? You know, that should not be the case.
Generally, I've seen this in the media industry that especially the acting world, I'd even say the YouTube world, I'd even say the stand-up comedy world. Is it a bit of a rat race? Like, at least people, I know it's not, but people perceive it like that. Like, I know all three are individual. YouTubers are enjoying their work.
Absolutely.
Actors are enjoying being in films. Stand-up comics, many of them are living out their dreams by performing on stage.
Yeah.
But somewhere in a lot of people's heads, it becomes a rat race. And I feel like the joy of the whole ecosystem kind of drains away because of that thought.
Yeah, so somewhere down the line, there is a rat race. So if, you know, if you're a YouTuber, your rat race would be how many subscribers am I adding month on month. That is one, you know, because there are these metrics system given by platforms. How many followers you have, how many views did you get, how many comments did you get, how many likes vis-a-vis dislikes you got. So those are, you know, created by the platforms, created by society. So that way only, you know, you are sort of, you're judging yourself. But I genuinely believe that if you're like, I'm telling you honestly, I mean, not in a negative way, but I don't read any comments at all, because it can throw you off.
Yeah. You know, the reason I asked you this question is I only say you and Rahul Subramanian as probably the two guys I've met, not in the stand-up comedy space, generally in the whole social media space, you guys don't look at it as a rat race. You're very joyous about where y'all are, and like, maybe because y'all had that contrast before.
Maybe because, you know, I'll be honest with you, earlier to sell a computer, where we were making like, maybe like, I'm not joking, you could make like 1,000 rupees on selling a computer. Just give you an example. You make, that's a margin you make, just 1,000 rupees on selling a computer. And to sell that computer, it might take you 1 week in terms of the transaction. Your client calls you, you give him a quote, he comes back, he compares it against 6 other vendors. And then you're fighting on the phone, oh sir, this is the reason you should give it to me. Then you deliver the computer, you install it, keep him happy for a year, and 1,000 rupees is what you make. So I've gone through those, you know, so for me, this is like very, very good. And so we are so privileged that, especially in stand-up comedy, where it's a new art form, just 10 years old, that all comedians, you know, there's a long way to go. You know, I think we are just at the tip of the iceberg. And I think 70-80% of India has not even seen what we are. Doesn't know that we exist, you know. And like till today, whenever we would go to a comedy show, even in Bombay, and we ask people, how many of you watching comedy show for the first time? You'll be surprised 50-60% of the people, I mean, live, obviously they watched it on YouTube or Netflix or whatever, but live, 50%, 60% of the room puts up their hands, you know. When did you last watch a live stand-up comedy? Tell me.
Before the lockdown.
Okay, like, then you're good. You're a good guy. I'm because I meet some of the interviews and they say, no, sir, I've never watched it. I said, then how are you interviewing me?
No.
Yeah. But you know, the point what I'm saying is, I think what I believe is that, first of all, these three art forms are very, their struggles are very, like acting, for example, has been there for decades, you know, years, hundreds of years. So that, those are different challenges. For example, acting, you compare acting with stand-up comedy. I have gone for auditions for, you know, movies, for ads, and it is brutal, you know. Like the casting guy will call you one day, sir, we are looking at exactly for a person like you, salt, pepper hair, suave looking, CEO looking, doctor looking. And so please come, sir, for the audition. And you go in your head, you'll think that maybe there'll be two guys over there. And you go there in the audition, there are 200 guys, all suave looking, all CEO looking, all salt pepper, you know, who will fit, and all actors. And I'm not an actor. And that's the kind of competition you have. So even in YouTubers, I think you're a YouTuber. You, the video which you make with your heart, with your soul, you know you had fun on it. You know, you know you're original. You've not copied anybody's idea. It has to do well, you know. In comedy, you know, there's a thing called the fourth wall. So when you're on the stage, there's a wall on the right, wall on the right, left, the wall behind you. The audience is the fourth wall. And they are the most intelligent wall. They can see whether you're lying or not lying. So as long as you're true to your art form, you know, you goof up on stage, address it, and the audience can see that you're not lying. That's, I think it's a very pure art form, stand-up comedy. You cannot lie, you cannot fib on stage, and the audience respects that. And I think, just to sort of sum up your question, I think it's just whatever you do, First of all, you know, thanks to, you know, YouTube and so many platforms, there are no entry-level barriers. Still in acting, there are some barriers. You know, you may have to know a Karan Johar or some guy, or you really struggled a lot. But for if you're original, you're funny, put out a video, put out a reel. There's so many platforms available. You have a 30-second reel, you have a 15-second Insta story, you have a, you know, whatever, 4-5, 1-minute IGTV, IG video. So, so many platforms available. Whatever your art form is, go there, do it. And if you're funny, you will, you know, do well. You know, like, for example, Yashraj Mukhate. Nobody knew him, what, 6 months ago, 8 months ago? Today, he's got like millions of followers. You know, musicians around India want to collaborate with him. Just see, the Sachin, he had nothing. He, a guy from Aurangabad, you know. So I think that's important. You have to be true to your art form and keep on doing it, keep on doing it, keep on doing it till you hit gold.
So because you're 40 plus, I'm sure you've seen people's stories played out in front of you.
Yeah.
So what are like negative patterns that you saw early on in your life in other people? Maybe, you know, who went down wrong paths or faded away. I don't have a better word for faded away. But, and do you see the same negative patterns happening with like the young people you meet in the media space?
So see, first of all, okay, just generally not comparing comedians or anything. I think you have to recognize the trends. So a lot of people initially shunned social media. What is Instagram? What is Twitter? What is Facebook? You know, I want to protect my personal life, which is fair enough for you if you want to do that. But listen, when you have to sell tickets, that's where you have to come, because kids nowadays stop reading newspaper. You're not watching TV. Where do you go to buy tickets? On social media, right? So if you're not yourself on social media, if you have 2,000 followers on Instagram and then you complain that my tickets are not selling, obviously, because only those 2,000 people are watching. Out of that, also hardly 50 people are this. Out of it, 10 people will buy your tickets. Maybe through other word of mouth, your tickets will sell. So if you're a live artist, performer, you have to, good or bad, you have to pimp yourself on social media. You have to come out. It's a struggle every day to come up with content. And some people do such a great job of it. Like, I get amazed, you know, when I see like Dolly Singh, Kusha Kapila, Prajakta, you know, every day churning out something like this. They have a plan in mind. It's not that they wake up and I'm sure they also get exhausted, but there's a proper plan to it, and that's why they are as popular as they are. They've got Bollywood roles, movies coming their way and things like that, or Netflix coming their way. So it's a hard work which finally pays, and I'm sure they're enjoying that. They don't, and I'm sure in some of the bad days also they must be kicking themselves up and say, hey, let me put this up because my fans are waiting for me to do something, you know. So I think it's very important. So I see only people who have not stayed relevant to the time, you know, whatever it is. Like when, for example, when Instagram came out with the reel, you know, I could have said, forget it. Yeah, but I attended that Instagram seminar where they explained to us what reel is. I put out some reels and I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the format, you know. It's like, you know, earlier in cricket, you know, Sunil Gavaskar used to play 200 runs. Get tired and go and sit in the pavilion and not field because he's tired, you know. Not today, you have to field also, you have to bowl also, plus you have to bat also. Because the format changed from 5-day change into T20. You know, so you have to be an all-rounder. So that's what I believe in saying, that you have to, first of all, recognize what are the platforms coming in, acknowledge them, don't shoo them away. See what are the trends coming in. As much as possible, whatever your limitations and your strengths are, use them and play to it, you know, if you want to be out there, especially in our business where you have to be continuously out there in terms of this. Also, one of the things which I've seen people falling is because sometimes they overexpose themselves, you know. Like in our line, what happens is, and this, actually I give credit to Veer Das, who I met him at the airport some few years back, and he explained to me, he's saying that, listen, when people come to watch you at a comedy show, you know, there should be a base price, that at this price is what I want to see Atul Khatri at, you know. You can't be one day performing for 100 rupees a ticket, next day doing a free show somewhere, next day showing 800 rupees ticket somewhere else, your audience will get confused. Okay, what is this worth, you know? Like, for example, if you go for a Veer Das show, the front row tickets are always minimum 1500 to 2000 rupees, and the cheapest is 750 rupees. So that's the worth he has attached to his ticket price. Now, tomorrow, same Veer goes and does 100 rupee ticket shows, and 50, his crowd will dissipate and they will now stop. So some of the things which I've seen many comedians do, that, you know, they give very confusing signals. And then they complain, yeah, nobody's buying my tickets, so my market value sort of is not increasing. Obviously, because you yourself have created it, you know. So like my shows also, I make it a point, like when any organizer comes to me and says that, hey, Atul, I want to show, I discuss it, even though he's paid me upfront for the entire show, I need not be bothered with what he's charging his patrons, I ask him, what is the front row ticket price? Please keep it at this price. Don't, even though you're making money from the sponsors, but don't undersell me or don't even oversell me.
I feel you've brought Sindhi business flair and combined it with a little egolessness. And I feel that usually when people age, what happens is one layer of ego gets attached. But and that's probably what you're saying. That's why they don't reinvent that. Oh, you know, social media is not, it's nothing for me. I'll stick to my newspapers and TV.
Yeah.
Or it could be, oh, I just want to use Facebook. I don't want to use Instagram Reels.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel you're very egoless with your work. And that's why like things worked out for you also.
Yeah, actually, you know, to be honest, this is actually one of the questions which when we, when I used to sell computers, and I'm not joking, so when you suppose there's a big order for like some 2-3 crores worth of total equipment, and you go there, and what most of these purchase managers do, they'll call all the vendors at more or less the same time. So there's an office inside, the purchase manager sitting, that day is going to sign an order for 2 crores. In the reception outside, he is called you also, he's called 6 of your competitors. So when you go there, only the waiting room, you say, oh my God, all my competitors sitting here. They also get the feeling. Okay. So they purposely do that. Okay, first only, when you enter the for the negotiations, you know that your competition is sitting there. You come down, you strip down to your bare minimum.
Wow.
You know, and that's a very good purchasing thing which a lot of companies do. You know, so that they purposely call people at this. And in our IT line, it was cutthroat competition. People used to sell computers at 20 rupee margins, 50 rupee margins. God. And I'm just giving an example, but very, very thin margins, you know. In our industry, in the IT industry, the margins are 2%, 3%. So you have to earn just 2%. And in that also, you know, pay everybody salary, sorry, be happy, you know, still try to make a profit out of it. So I've come from that cutthroat industry. And right in the beginning, like initially in the days when there were very few companies, I should tell everybody, listen, we don't have, we are competing against ourselves. Don't create this unnecessary, stupid competition. Kya? Oh, yeah, what is AIB doing? Let us do that. Oh, what is EIC doing? Let me follow that. Oh, they formed a collective. We'll form a collective. Oh, they'll do this. We should do that. I said, play to your own strength and don't unnecessarily compete, you know. Compete with yourself. Like Shah Rukh Khan once said, you know, I only compete with myself. I don't compete with anybody else. It's not that he's being egoistic about it, but that's genuinely it is. As an actor, you try to raise the bar in every acting you do. As a comedian, we try to write, okay, 6 years back, this was my writing style. Have I brought something? Have I learned, you know? Have I changed myself? Have I learned something more? And, you know, my next writing should be much better where you yourself feel very happy about it, you know? And I think, I mean, if I look at my writing 7 years back, 8 years back, and now, it has definitely changed. It has become better. I have become more learned. I have, you know, I'm reading a lot. I am observing a lot more. I know what is right, what is not right. You know, 8 years back, you know, a lot of us, you know, I mean, in school, we used to call our best friend, hey, Kalia, hey, Motu, and all. Now you realize that somewhere down, it's not right, you know. I was a fat child. I used to be called Motu. So, you know, all my friends used to call Sindhi Chindi, they used to call me. You know? But which a lot of Sindhis will realize, or you know, if you're Spexi, they'll call you Double Battery in Bombay. If you know, there's a typical Bava. If you're Parsi, you're Bava. If you're Catholic, you're Mac or Makapao, you know. So nowadays, now it's suddenly become woke. You cannot do all these things, you know. So, so I'm saying, more as a, I mean, if I would have not been in this comedy life, I'd still be doing my business. I still think I would somewhere be that guy, you know, who's not so, I would say, educated enough. You know?
So, you know, I'm going to mention one of the tweets that my co-founder wrote, Viraj. He basically mentioned that so there is woke and then there's over woke. And woke will get offended about every second thing, which is that, oh, how dare you?
How dare you
like even say Motu? Or how dare you even say, like, you know, whatever. Like, they'll get pissed off about the smallest things. And I mean, the whole point of them being over woke is about them being accepting. They want to say that, okay, you know, I'm ready to accept, what's it called? Variety in gender. I'm ready to accept variety in race. I'm ready to accept variety in people. But if you go against their ideologies even a little bit, they will pounce at you.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that's the nature of the times we live in. And
people have become over woke, you know, and they have to just calm themselves down that, you know, it will take time.
Do you think there's actually just parental angst that's coming out as over wokeness?
No, not really. I think there may be, see, actually what has also happened, you have to realize that social media really polarizes you.
Social dilemma.
It's actually social dilemma. Mm-hmm. If you see that, they are trained to polarize you. And it mm-hmm. You can see it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Since last 4 days, I saw this one YouTuber, some Gora who comes to India. And because I'm going to Varanasi for a trip. So I was searching for good food in Varanasi. Mm-hmm. So I landed up with this one food blogger, some Goras, 2-3 of them who come to India. I forget the name right now. And last 3 days, whenever I open Facebook, it is just popping me those videos of food bloggers, you know, what food to eat, where, what, you know, what to do, what to do. And India, Pakistan, last 4 days, I've just been consumed, which is the best food in Pakistan, in Lahore. I will never go there, maybe.
Yeah.
Or in Iran, or in Malaysia, in some awesome Chengdu in China, which is the best chicken to eat there. But that's how social is just throwing me. And so today I realized I will not do that. I will go and watch some, you know, so it's exactly what happens when you are so woke. Automatically, all social media just, you know, starts throwing you those super woke ideas. It will tell you people who to follow, those super woke guys. And it will automatically take you there. If you watch Social Dilemma, what we spoke about, that the thing on Netflix, where he said in the end, you must follow some other people who are against, who are opposing of your views. So then
just
only
to
you'll get
to, it out.
Just to balance it out. You know, which is so important.
Yeah. 100%. So I'm honestly kind of apolitical because my political ideology is that unless you can do something about it, don't have extremely strong opinions on it. And I see most people who have extremely strong political opinions, my age, I'm not talking about people your age. Your age is different, I feel. But in their 20s, it's like the lesser the ambition, the more extreme the political opinion. So either they'll be hardcore right wing or hardcore left wing, and usually they're not doing much with their life. I feel that if you want to have a really strong opinion, also offer solutions, also work towards something. But that's just my opinion. And I follow the social dilemma principle of following all the extreme left, extreme right, more apolitical people. And I genuinely feel that's a healthy practice, but it's not something that's going to happen in our times. I think I see how the extreme left talks and they're only following all left wing accounts. Same with extreme right. But anyway, have you heard of this guy called Todd Phillips, the guy who directed The Hangover?
Of course, right?
He's also the guy who directed The Joker.
The latest
yeah,
one.
Which is about mental health issues and depression. And if you see that movie, it's very dark. And you can tell that one, that Joaquin Phoenix is an extremely dark guy. He's probably gone through shit himself. And you can also tell that whoever's directed this has gone through an extremely dark time. And then you find out that the same guy's directed The Hangover, which is like an iconic comedy film. One of the funniest films I've seen in my life. And then I also go back to my teenage and my childhood where there was a lot of Ben Stiller movies. There was amazing comedies that used to come out and that just doesn't happen anymore. So someone asked Todd Phillips the same question that why don't you direct anymore? Probably the world of comedy movies needs you. And he said, I'm not going to direct comedy movies. This is not the age of comedy. Comedy died like around 10 years back. Once social media came up. Because he's like, if you even go and watch The Hangover right now, there is a scene in The Hangover where Alan, the slightly chubby guy, he takes a baby's hand and moves it to make it look like the baby is shagging.
Jerking off,
So if you do that now, you'll probably find people will get offended by it.
100%.
Or, you know, he's like, there are jokes on Mexicans in that movie. And, you know, if we think India is a country that takes offense, so is America. America also takes offense over like the smallest things. So Todd Phillips said that it's not the age of comedy movies anymore, but I'll give you the other flip side now. So there is like 3-4 gens of YouTubers in India. Okay. The first gen would be EIC, AIB, you guys, TVF, all that. Second gen would be myself, Nikhil, Prajakta, Bhuvan, Ashish. Third gen would be like a Slay Point and all the people you've seen right now, like, you know, the gaming guys who suddenly
go.
And then there's a fourth gen, which is extremely dank. Dank humor is like very offensive. So I think this 10 years of, you know, they've daba ke rakhod all their offensive jokes are going to come out in one offensive volcano in the 20s. That's my hope. But what do you think of this? Like, what do you see happen? Because I'm sure you've also observed that comedy and the nature of comedy has evolved over time. And usually comedy is a reflection of the society we live in. So do you, what do you think that this is going to happen? People are going to have an offensive joke volcano. Have you ever seen a dank meme page on Instagram?
I have.
It's very dark.
Yeah, it's very dark. You know, still, I think in terms of pure comedy as such, there are some people who enjoy, like I, honestly, I know off the record, on the record, I'm okay with it, but I love dark comedy. Like, I at home, you should see the dark jokes I make with my daughters and my wife. And I'll just mess around, like, say, hey, this is a new joke I'm trying.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll write a real dark, like, I'll think of a joke. I thought, I know, because somewhere, as a comedian, I have to vent it out. I can't vent it out on Twitter. I can't vent it out anywhere. So I have to tell it to somebody, because that thought has to come out of my head. Or we have an old EIC group, and somewhere I'll write somewhere, you know, something of that sort, you know.
Yeah. No.
Are you mad, Dad? You like get burnt alive if you say this. Also, you can't even think about it. How are you thinking about it? I said, no. It's that, you know, it's the angst of
not being able to do it.
Like, I'm sure once, you know, we should have like a, I mean, we won't tell you guys about it, but we'll have one room, like, this is a dark comedy night. Everybody come there. It'll be one of those, you know, I mean, earlier these LGBTQ movements, meetings used to be, you know, before the section got, this to be held underground, you know. So there's to be these secret groups where they say, hey, we are meeting at this bar, everybody come. And I've attended some of these meetings to perform there.
Yeah.
And I'm not any of these, but I support the movement very thing. So I had some friends who are from the LGBTQ community, and I used to go there for the meetings, and it used to be so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, this happened at 2:30 in the afternoon to 4:30, because they didn't want anybody, the cops, to come and bust them and things like that, you know. So like that, we should have one of these dark comedy nights where through just SMSs and, you know, we said, hey, there's a dark comedy night happening. Come here. And just everybody just coming and, you know, opening up and removing the angst. Yeah. And I think people have to take jokes, you know, literally. Don't take them so seriously. And don't get offended. Like today, I'm telling you, you know, the kind of, as a comedian, as a Twitter, as a person who's very, like, active on Twitter, you know, I've seen that change. Yeah. I've seen that change where, you know, you write the most positive thing, you know, and still there'll be six guys who will get offended and flip it around and say, hey, I got offended. I mean, chill the hell down, man, you know. Recently, Mr. Modi also said that, you know, guys have a sense of humor, you know. I mean, in college, don't get any. In fact, I think he was referring to his own bucks, because he said that, you know, in college life and all, enjoy college life. Don't take so seriously. So just have a sense of humor, enjoy it. Like I tell, like I tweeted about this, you know, just give your children sense of humor. That's it. Then they will survive for the rest of their life if they have a sense of humor. 100%. That's most important. Yeah.
I think it gets you through the darkest of times.
And it's not only in India, it happens, it's happening everywhere. Like how Todd Phillips said, it's happening everywhere. You know, it's overexposure to, it's today you have actually a tool, you know. Today you can send a tweet to Narendra Modi and he may read it, or to an Amitabh Bachchan. In my time, 15 years back, you have to know Amitabh Bachchan's address, where he lives, you know. There's no, he won't be listed on a telephone directory. So your hope would be Amitabh Bachchan, Juhu, and just put it in a mailbox, Bombay, it may reach him. And then you have to write a letter, you know, take a paper, write a letter, post it, go to the post office, put a stamp, put it. Now it's like he's there, just tweet, throw stones at him directly, you know. So that's why people are getting more offended, you know.
But do you think there'll be that dank volcano?
I don't think so. In India, at least, it may take. So it will still be very underground movement, you know, kind of a thing. Because even though we have a very rich culture of comedy as a nation, you know, it's not that this is our genre is 10 years old, but there's been comedy from many. There have been mimicry artists. There have been guys in Marathi theatre like Pula Deshpande, you know. So many guys in Punjab and in down south, you know, satire has always been, you know, Akbar Birbal, what was that? That was all about, you know, satire and jokes and things like that. You know, you always had a court jester. So comedy has always been a part, but it's now that, you know, people are taking more offense to it. And as you know, I think Ricky Gervais said, you can say any type of a joke. You can joke about anything you want, you know, if you take it in the literal sense. But what happens in India as a comedian also, you know, we are performing in different, like already last year I performed in Agra, Udaipur, forget. I think it was Agra. Sorry, Udaipur. Where there was the first time in history of Udaipur, I think it was, that stand-up comedy was happening. First time ever a show was happening. You know, first time ever of our genre. They would have had that Hasa Kavi and, you know, Mimikri, Raju Srivastava and all would have been. But this our genre, first time ever. 300 people turned up for the show. Now what happens is most of them are watching stand-up comedy for the first time. I would say 90% of them. Some of them would have traveled abroad and watched, you know. So it becomes a responsibility of the comedian also to see that you don't scare them away, you know. If I bring out my best dark jokes, You say, "Man, this is stand-up comedy." No. Let us watch, you know, Kapil Sharma on TV. You know, that's good for us. This is not good comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, he insulted Modi. Oh, he insulted Rahul Gandhi. You know, no. This is not good. So it becomes a responsibility of the comedian to go and, you know, see that they accept, see the room, read the room, and start with simple Sindhi jokes, Marwadi jokes, Punjabi jokes, you know, whatever, you know.
That's a part of every stand-up act. Like, you have to go in on stage and actually sense the energy and then alter your jokes.
Yeah. Oh. Always. It's, okay. And you have to, like, sometimes what happens is that, the host will tell you, or the event organizer, hey, you know, say what you want. It's all adult crowd. Say what you want, you know. And so what at least most comedians do is release a test joke to see whether really are they prepared to do that or no, you know. And within like first 3-4 minutes, we come to know whether it's a audience which is very conservative or very open to take whatever kind of jokes, you know. And you slowly take them through. Don't hit them so hard initially. Then they say, oh my God, forget it. This is not for us, you know. Because in stand-up comedy, such an art form that the audience decides to like you in the first 2-3 minutes. And if they love you, then you can take them for 2 hours also. But if you do say something wrong on stage, the first 2-3 minutes, then they all, you know, gang up against you, then you sit there for 4 days also, they will still not like you. You know? So that's what comedy is. So I think it becomes, a responsibility of the comedian to see that you don't scare away the audiences. If I would have gone and, you know, created havoc or dark jokes or, you know, too many sex jokes in that Udaipur, and we don't know. So next time a comedian would come who wouldn't have those jokes, but he wouldn't sell tickets because, we don't want this kind of comedy, you know. And I said Kapil Sharma, the word, but I want to say that, you know, a lot of young kids say, oh, we don't like Kapil Sharma and all that. But genuinely speaking, the kind of comedy he does on a GEC, on TV, you know, he's done an amazing, great job because whatever said, those marriage jokes, observation jokes, what he does, but you have to see his hands are tight on TV, on radio, on FM. You can't say, for example, you can't say Narendra Modi. You have to always call him Honorable Prime Minister. You can't say Muslim. You have to say member of the minority community. There are words you cannot say, you know.
Wow.
You cannot say Shiv Sena. You have to always refer to them as a regional political party. So they, under those circumstances, you can't do politics, you can't do sex, you cannot do. We comedians are very, very privileged. We can go on stage and say what the hell we want, you know. But their hindsight, and in spite of all that, you know, he's been holding the audiences for years together. Great job, you know, amazing job.
How does your, like, English stand-up comedy or urban stand-up comedy look at people like Sunil Pal, Raju Srivastav, Naveen Prabhakar, all those?
Dude, I grew up, they are my inspirations, you know. Raju, at that time there was no, you know, we used to not, at that time we had no access to what George Carlin or, you know, who the old comedians were. Obviously some tapes and all used to come, but like the first tape I watched was in, early 90s was Eddie Murphy. The Delirious that came on some VHS, you know, where first time, oh my God, he's abusing so much on stage. And that time, just the fact that when you're young, growing up, somewhere just saying the F word 10 times, you should get excited to listen to that, you know. Like, how is he saying all these things? And he's talking about sex, he's talking about making love on stage and this. My God, that's the first actual stand-up video I ever watched. But I mean, coming back to your question, Johnny Lever, Raju Srivastav, Sunil Pal, their Indian Laughter Challenge and all, we grew up, those are our idols, you know. Maybe their some of their times have gone because they should typically rely on mimicry, you know. And at that time, I mean, I had met this, I once performed in Gujarat with this, I forget the gentleman's name, but he's a very popular comedian in Gujarat doing mimicry. And we were having lunch and he's acknowledging, see, our art form mimicry is going to die. I said, why do you say that? He's saying, because during art, I'm olden days, the actors had such strong personalities and voices, you know.
Wow.
Like Dilip Kumar had a style. Raj Kumar used to come and do Jani. And, you know, somebody else used to do something else. Ashok Kumar had a style. Every actor had his own style, you know. He's saying, now today, all these young crop, Ranveer, Ranbir, you know, you see, other than today's probably Saif Ali Khan, who still has a, you know, something to himself. You see, the rest of the new crop, they themselves are changing character every movie. They don't have a particular voice, you know. Maybe few like Nawazuddin Siddiqui, you know, or Irfan Khan, late Irfan Khan had a, you know, personal, very typical style. You see, it's so difficult to mimic, you know, and that's why that entire sort of genre is slowly, slowly dying. Still very popular in rural India and all that, but, you know, like I took my kids to, you know, Johnny Lever Sir's one show. I'm a huge fan of his. You know, I mean, whenever I've had the opportunity to meet him once or twice, and they couldn't get the references, you know. Who's Raj Kumar? Papa, who's Dilip Kumar? You know, they don't know any of these guys because he was doing it mimicking. I was enjoying it. My wife was enjoying it. And they said, who's this guy he's trying to imitate or mimic? You know, so that is the thing.
Wow. Never thought of that.
Yeah. So that's very important how these things have changed, you know, and changing.
So I was born in 93 and in 2010, I was about like 17, 18 years old. And you're fresh out of college and you're looking for shit to do other than just getting into alcohol for the first time in your life.
Yeah.
And I think I was one of those first people who ended up going for comedy club shows at Canvas Laugh Factory and all that. So I've seen you guys, like, you know, that first gen of comics really come up. Like I think I've attended one of your shows also way back.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I'm sure I might have. But what was the thought amongst y'all when y'all were, like, when this whole AIB, EIC, SNG was happening? So what was the overall vibe in the stand-up community? Like, what was the point of doing that?
Stand-up message or the collectives?
The collectives.
The collectives, I think...
Because it was rising. Stand-up was rising by itself also.
Yeah, but, you know, that time you felt you require some kind of a collaboration in terms of, you know, doing more work, you know. Like sketches. Like I remember when I was invited by Saurabh Pant to do EIC, his brief was me that, hey, we are planning to do more shows, doing format shows, doing shows that require 3-4 people. So we're looking at like-minded writers, you know, who write in their same zone and things like that. And we have found you very funny. We found you, you know, in the same zone as us. So can you join us? And it was like some coffee shop we met in Palladium itself. And it did like 2 minutes. I said, yeah, sure. I said, where do we meet? We don't have an office. I said, well, we'll meet in some coffee shop somewhere here and then we'll meet. So it was, yeah, let's work together. There was no plan. There was no thought. Honestly, but the idea was to like, what was happening is that brands were coming to us, they create a sketch for us. You know, that time, if you see, there were a lot of sketches everybody used to put out, you know, like Valentine's Day, how is it celebrated? And then we used to have a big sketch of 8 minutes, 10 minutes. Every AIB also, so what we used to do, which take the year and see, okay, which event? So Holi happens in March. So let's have a sketch on Holi. So start writing about it in Jan. Let's shoot it in Feb. And by first week of March, let's put it out like a Holi, how Holi is celebrated in India, you know, a sketch about that. And okay, now let's do a Diwali sketch. Let's do a Christmas sketch. Let's do a Women's Day sketch. Let's do a, you know, whatever different Rose Day and those day sketches. So that was really the idea. And the idea was to more writers on the board. So more, you know, different
creative inputs.
Creative inputs. And like, for example, I mean, I think even AIB has admitted. And we used to also say that if we had more women writers that time, you know, maybe our we would have gone in other directions also. It was, you know, when I think somebody had, I think once complained to AIB, at that time, I think 3-4 years back, somebody put up a blog, hey, all your, you know, sketches are very, you know, misogynistic or very male-centric. And Tanmay said, right, dude, you have 4 guys, Ashish, me, Rohan, and Khamba writing, we're all guys, we don't think from, maybe we need to get more female writers, which were not there right that time, you know, getting into comedy space. And so that perspective also comes out, you know. And I remember in EIC, we hired 2 female writers towards the end, like when I left. And a lot of sketches came out on Women's Day and getting that. And we should say very clearly, hey, guys, you write the sketches. We are just going to add a little bit inputs to it because we wanted to your voice to come out, you know.
But what happened? Like, why did all of, like, why did that culture stop?
So that, I think what happened is that maybe at that time, it was the need of the hour that you have collectives write. You know, but after some time, what happened, I think each of us individually started, you know, getting a lot of brand work and things, a lot of our own things. But my reason for me leaving EIC was very, very personal because, see, I came from 25 years of corporate life, you know. I did this to follow my passion, you know, like I wanted to wake up at 10:30, 11 on a Monday morning, you know, go to a nice coffee shop, sit and write. That's what I wanted to do. So I left all that. I did it for 25, 26 years. So when EIC started growing very fast and we were doing very well, so we said, oh, now we are 7 of us, we need a proper office. So we hired an office. They said, now we need writers. I said, okay, right. We started adding writers. Okay, now we need an accountant. We need an admin guy. We need a watchman outside, you know, kon aa raha hai, kon ja raha hai. Okay, now we've hired 6 writers. Now we need everybody to come on time. And if we don't come on time, they may not come. There has to be a target for them. Hey guys, today we have to come out with 6 memes. Okay, like today is March, Holi is coming. Give me 6 ideas on Holi. Each of you write individually what let's think. But we were comedians, we were traveling, which also means that if you're calling your writers at 11, even you have to reach by 11. You know, otherwise, honestly, in India or anywhere in the world, forget India, nobody works till everybody's there, you know. So, which means then we started making rules that, okay, everybody, each of us also has to come at 11 o'clock to the office, which means I live in Juhu, which is in the offices in Lower Parel. I moved the skull. Anyway, is he talking to me? That's actually me after 6 years with the horns. So which means I have to leave at 9 o'clock from Juhu, pack a lunchbox, go there, click, be there till 7. And I said, shit, I did this for 26 years. I got out of that. I don't want to go back into that routine of an office and an admin and timing and salary paying. For all these other guys, it was good because it was challenging. They're all young kids. They were getting corporatized. I'm coming out of a corporate. I didn't want to get into this. And we are the best of friends till today. And we said, dude, I can't do this. You know, I want to follow my passion, you know, getting too much in this, starting a company again. I've left the company to this. So that was my reason. So yes, they're doing great work and they still exist. And yeah. And I think more also what happened was like my first video, which I released I started doing comedy 2012. After 5 years, I started on my own. So initially I was alone, then 3 years I was with the EIC. 2017, when I released that Justin Bieber video. You'll be surprised, the maximum comments I got that time was that people thought that was my first stand-up comedy video. You know, they didn't know I was doing comedy for, you know, like 4 years, 5 years before that. So like, there's so many comedians. What happens is that, amazing video. This, as a first video, this is very good. I said, dude, I'm doing comedy since last 5 years. You never watched me before. So that was the thing. So I think it's the right time I sort of broke out and, you know, this. And Touchwood done well from then. And even EIC is growing and they're doing well. So it's good. It's like, I think the industry itself is growing. So I think it was the need of the hour that time. AIB obviously closed down for different reasons. TVF closed down for different reasons. You know, SNG also closed down. I think, but what has happened, the best thing about it is that now you're on your own. You know, the pressure is on you. There is no crutch, that, you know, if I don't go for, I know still there'll be a sketch. You have to wake up and make that sketch yourself if you want to make it.
Okay, I got to turn on the Sindhi in you. did you plan out your business game in comedy? Also, like, how do stand-up comics make money in the modern day? Because I know that the whole COVID pandemic has created a massive hit on that industry. And the third question along with these two is, how do you manage money like nowadays?
So one is, in terms of the planning, yes, there is definitely some kind of a plan, just like any YouTuber has.
You anybody evolve your brand or something into?
No, not really. In terms of, yeah, evolving the brand, like, for example, slowly and steadily, you know, you sort of build on your brand value. Like the example I gave of Veer, where this is my ticket price. Anything below that, I'm not going out and, you know, doing comedy. Like today, even for a corporate show, I have a minimum billing value. Beneath that value, I will say no. I will be doing it at home, doing nothing, maybe feeling a little bad that even that is actually money. You should have done it other than sitting at home and scratching, you know. And sometimes when you're a wife, she's saying, what is wrong with you? Just for 10,000 rupees, you refuse that gig. I said, yeah, it's a point I have to make. Because that's how you build your value, you know. I mean, you have to stop. Otherwise, you will get a gig for 10,000, ye bhi karo, next is 40,000, ye bhi karo. Then market gets confused. What is his real value? So that's one way. So in terms of plan, you know, I think, yes, that every probably 2-3 months, 6 months, you release a nice video. Because unfortunately, at one time, we reached a stage, you release a video and then your ticket sales used to rise. Now that has not happened. All these platforms have changed the algorithms. So it's very difficult now. You can't gauge what is selling, what is not selling. But yeah, if your video becomes super viral, people start coming for your shows. So yeah, there is a little plan. I think every comedian follows that. You write a new special every year. You take it around the world if you can. And then hopefully a Netflix or an Amazon will come and, you know, come to you and you negotiate and to shoot that special. That is one part of it. Second part of it, as a writer, how you're evolving, you know. Consuming, what are you consuming? As a comedian, you're digging deeper into yourself and trying to get the better jokes out. you know, more, you know, I would say personal jokes, more, you know, insightful jokes. You know, because I think the observational jokes, you finished with it, you know, regular jokes, you finished with it. Now you go deep down and see what you can, you know, build. That's one part of it. So I think the places where comedians make money, obviously one is the ticketed shows, which you sell tickets for. Number two is you get private shows, corporate shows.
Is that the big one, like corporate shows?
Yeah, obviously. Okay. It's big for everybody. And for musicians, for any art form, you know, that's the biggest money you make because they're paying for it. Private shows pay you for it. Then we get a lot of writing opportunities. As comedians, we are writers. So a lot of, you know, like I remember in EIC and even AIB, a lot of, we used to do these film fair awards. So when you see Shah Rukh Khan going on stage and for 3 hours, Shah Rukh Khan and whoever, Saif Ali Khan going and, you know, cracking jokes on stage for 3 hours at film fair awards, obviously they don't have time to sit and write jokes. So we used to go, writers like us write for them, you know. Even some of the, even to, till today, like Big Boss and so many of these comedic episodes are written by writers, comedians, writers.
And people don't know that even that writing gig pays a lot.
Actually, doesn't pay a lot, to be honest with you. They because these film writers have always been there. You know, people used to write for films and, you know, movies and things like that. And somehow the budgets there are not some crazy budgets. Okay. They are good, but good to sustain, but not some, it's not crazy money. But yes, that opportunity is there.
I've heard like TV writers and all get paid like 50, 60K per episode and all this.
Maybe for a big episode, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that, but that episode writing may take a lot of time, and it could maybe be a team of 2-3 writers writing that. Could not
and,
be.
And also maybe I'm thinking about Saas Bahu shows.
Maybe.
But go on.
Yeah. So writing is obviously a good opportunity you get and comedic writing. And especially in today's world where it has become so difficult because you can't say this. So in that environment, still trying to write, create jokes. So writing, then you get brand work. So some of us who are comedians who are extremely, you would say, popular or active on social media, you get some brand, you know, work you get. I think these are the, and supposing then if your special comes out on Netflix and all, you get a good money from them. So it's, yes, there is a good thing. As long as you're, you know, dedicated towards it, as long as you're working very hard. I'm honestly telling you, I'm working more hard than I should do in my corporate life. Even though I should run a company with a lot of people working under me and a lot of more commitment, because at that time you're sort of responsible for everybody's salaries. On the third of the month, you have to pay salaries to 50 people, you know. That pressure used to be there. You have to get money in somehow in the company. Now that pressure is not there, but still I'm working more hard.
Yeah.
Harder, I would say. Because now it's your brand, you know, you're not selling a Cisco router, which is somebody else's brand. Now it's your own brand you're trying to create.
And there's so many multiple kinds of
things happening
doing.
And, you know, and so I think, so in the pandemic also, what has happened is obviously few comedians like me, Amit Tandon, some of us, Vipul, and, you know, I think me and Amit and 2-3, like, we realized this first that the pandemic is going to be harsh for us because live stage performances wouldn't happen. So the pandemic lockdown happened on 18th of March. And by 2nd April, I had my first show on Zoom. Didn't know what Zoom was. Never heard of it before. Installed it, learned it, and sort of got into it. So I hit my first show on 2nd of April. Then I had a show every week. I used to do a Friday 10 p.m. show. I used to get started with 50 people, went on to 100 people, went on to as more as 400 people towards the end. So I quickly learned that. And then the corporate shows started coming on Zoom also. So to be honest with you, I thought when the pandemic hit us, we're going to all die. You know, it's like somebody had cut off our throats. We can't speak any longer. And all of us thought that time it's going to be like 21 days, 40 days. Maximum it'll be 76 days because Wuhan had cured itself in 46 days. So we'll also get out in 76, maximum 100 days. But it went on for 8 months and still going on. So did a lot of shows on that. We made money. And obviously what happened was that because a lot of people were at home, a lot of brand work started coming in, you know, more than last year. So because I was active on social media, touchwood, I got a lot of those deals also. And I'm telling you, there are things which I've done in this pandemic, in the lockdown, which I would have never done in my normal. Like I have made people play housey. Like 2 and 4, 24. Oh, 24 is the year I hit my puberty. The client said, you have to make people pay housey. And after every number, there has to be a joke. You're a comedian. They can get anybody else, you know. So on the spot, you're thinking, you've written some joke. Oh, 2 and 24, 24. 4 and 8, 48. Oh, the day I lost my virginity. You know, so... So I did make people play housey. I've done some crazy things which I would have never done that in the, you know. And I think for a lot of us, it was against survival. You know, I have, you know, I have a family to sustain. I have a, you know, so it's, but rightfully a lot of comedians have taken a creative break. You know, they said, no, I don't want to perform on Zoom. That's not the right platform. Yeah, maybe not the right platform. I think it's 60-70% to a live thing. And more than anything, even the people were, you know, wanting the, some kind of a, you know, relief, some kind of entertainment. We fulfilled that. And I think I was happy that I was one of the early adapters of this new virtual platform. And it's not been so bad, you know, what I had envisaged it to be. And now as we're opening up and things are, I think very soon... you know, I think the worst part about this pandemic is it's, you know, we initially at in maybe June, July, we all thought how the nature has come back and, you know, dolphins are in Bombay, sparrows have come back. You can see Himalayas from Jalandhar, you know, all that happened. We'll come out as better human beings. Nothing of that sort.
We're going back.
We are going back instantly. I remember the first time I drove, I said, my God, I'm driving after 4 months, you know, and first auto rickshaw cut me and I am arre, maada chod, hain chod. I became like a janwar in like 1 second, you know. So
no, I know what you mean. Do you feel, I mean, this is a thought I've had during the lockdown. Do you think you'll leave Mumbai at some point?
Lot of people are actually thinking that. Lot of people are thinking. Just yesterday I was with some comedians, we were discussing that. Like comedians, some people generally are thinking, hey, let's shift to Canada. Let's shift here, let's shift there, you know. Like a lot of comedians in the pandemic left Bombay, they shifted to Goa. You know, a lot of people shifted to Goa because they said, "This let me, you know, let me work, if I have to work from home, let me work in a more beautiful place." But no, I will not leave Bombay, India. I'm too old rather. A lot of commitments already here. I love, you know, and whatever said and done, you know, for a comedian, India is an amazing place to be here just in terms of the kind of content which we get. You know, we are such a rich, you know, society, such so many quirky languages, communities. You have Bollywood, you have politics, you have cricket, you have so many things. You open, you know, the newspaper every day, you get four hours of comedic material just by reading the newspaper. You know, Singapore, or you go to these places, they're so flat, you know, there's nothing happening, you know. America still is huge, a lot of things happening, but I'm just saying in India, I will never leave India. I mean, I love India, it's my country. And and I think, you know, the reasons why a lot of comedians, we were having the discussion, they were thinking, is it safe to do comedy in India any longer, you know, with this very right-wing thing, you say anything, people are, you know, waiting to pounce on you. They were just waiting for you to make one mistake and maybe you'll have the CBI, ED, EOW all at your doorsteps, you know. So I said, no, yeah, I'm willing to take that risk. And as long you, and what has happened is, unfortunately, comedians are self-censoring themselves, you know, and because see, finally, and let me tell you, it's not only India, all countries around the world have their own do's. Probably, I think, other than America, where you can go at the night and, you know, give galis to the president and next morning, you know, like this. But all countries, like I performed in Dubai, you perform in Thailand, you perform, every country has more or less things which you should not talk about, you know, which you can say, which you cannot say. You know, but yeah, so you do that when you go there. So similarly, like here, you more or less, and more, it's not about that. Like, for example, I don't do any religious jokes at on stage or ever, you know. And the reason is not because I don't have, because first of all, I'm, for some reason, personal reason, I am a Hindu. I believe in Hinduism and things like that. Unless there's a point to be made, you don't see. First of all, let me tell you, comedians don't get, you know, hey, chalo, let me offend somebody. Chalo, kya hai? Chalo, I'm a Hindu, chalo, aaj Muslims ko offend karte ho. I'm a Muslim, chalo, chalo, theek, apne community ko offend karte na kuch. Let me just poke something. No, nobody, I mean, you'd be a very juvenile comedian to think that way, you know. You have to have a very strong, nice opinion, and finally, there have to be jokes. You just don't offend to this. Like, I don't do political jokes on stage ever. It's, see, politics is, I reserve it for Twitter because that's a flavor of the day. You know, something has happened, you comment on it. And it's a genuine comment. Like, you know, just today when I was coming here, I saw, I've been on Facebook since the last 12 years. Today, like just yesterday or today, I was reading on my, you know, Facebook bring back those memories. And back then I used to make jokes on Rahul Gandhi and Congress or things like that. And then they're all there, you know. The fact is that now these, all this 12 years back, half these bucks were not even living, I think, alive that time. You know, now they're all alive, and now they're, oh, why are you saying only against Modi? Why not against Rahul? Why are you paid by Congress? Are you mad about, you know? Go to old tweets and see. Yeah. I mean, see, I'll tell you, this is one point which I always make, you know, in an absence of an opposition, a strong opposition, you know, it becomes responsibility of everybody to at least say what is right, what is wrong, you know. Like, I'll tell you one thing. Like, sometime back, I think last year, Modiji was, I think, in Varanasi, climbing the step, and he fell down. Okay. And all these left-wing started making jokes on that. And I think this is so stupid. It's an old man falling down. You fucking don't make jokes about it, you know. Your father could fall tomorrow. You know, he missed a step and he fell down. Yeah. I think it was very foolish for anybody to sit and write jokes on that or make memes about that, you know.
That's, again, your social dilemma speaking through them.
Not really. I think it's more of a, it's not something to make fun of. Yeah. But if his policy on farmers is not good, I am going to talk about it. What I feel, if, and one thing which I do is I don't go just because the tide is saying, you know, this, I'm an old person. I read newspaper, you know, I don't believe on what the news channels are saying, TVs is saying, or what Twitter is saying. I wait for a post and next day I read the newspaper. I do my own research before having comment. If I'm going to talk about farmer issue, for example, which is going on right now, I should exactly know what it is before talking about it. I'm not like an idiot, farmer. Yes, you support it. They have a point. Lakhs of them are, you know, at the Delhi border. But you have to have your own opinion about it, you know. So I think that's very, very important for people to just step back, you know, just don't comment on anything just for the heck of it or tweet anything for the heck of it. Step back. You know, listen, read, understand, and then post about it.
What's the best way to get into news for a teenager today? Because you're exposed again to social media and you're exposed to TV channels, both of which can be extremely polarizing.
I still feel newspaper, 2-3 newspapers. Again, it's not same social dilemma. Just don't read Times of it. Have a Hindu, have a this. And I spend 1 hour of my day every day reading newspaper, you know. And everything I read.
Because you're a stand-up comic also?
No, I should do it. Because I'm a stand-up comic, I used to do it always before. I still do it. I'm an old person. So, you know, I have to have, like, that's a routine of mine since years. Like, reading the newspaper. It's instilled by my family. We every day in our house, we are a joint family. We get 3 sets of newspapers. So it's like somebody's reading the Hindu, somebody's reading the Times of India, then somebody's reading the Hindustan Times, and we all then again swap it and we all read that. It's the same news, obviously. But so news channel, TV news channel, I have stopped. And obviously there are a lot of legit, you know, on social media, Twitter accounts you can follow, which gives you a fair thing of what it is, you know.
Feel free to name some.
Yeah. Just so many there. Like In Shorts is there, for example, which just telling you, it's not giving an opinion, you know. Faye D'Souza, for example, on YouTube. She's a very respected journalist. She's come up on YouTube. She calls experts on. You know what has happened today in these other news channels? They'll be talking about farmer protest, and that news panel, that thing, they'll get a comedian. They'll get an old retired Bollywood actor. What do you feel, sir, about farmer? You know, that guy has freaking no clue, you know, and he's got to call at 6:30, come for this panel at 8 o'clock. And then 1.5 hours, sir, kya bolna hai, you know. And maybe they'll say, sir, aap ek kaam karo, you take this opinion, you know, say that you're with the government. And he's anyway a right wing bhakt comedian, actor. So he's going on, he has no opinion. He'll be actually on the TV initially, he'll be given 2 words to speak only. There's about 40 people on that channel, on that debate. You know, he's just there to, you know, in his dying days, so that people still know that he's alive. He's relevant to something. So, like Faye, for example, doesn't do that. She'll only call experts, you know. And they, so follow people like her, you know, and follow the right people, basically, you know, whoever you feel are. And as we already discussed, follow both sides so you get an opinion.
100%. And you can also see how far human stupidity can get if you if you allow it to snowball into something, which is what I enjoy. When I see extreme right or extreme left, I'm like, yo, why are you doing this to yourself? But
I actually watch Republic News debates in the night just to de-stress. You know? They're just screaming and I'm just love, you know. Yeah. I've seen once or twice people on a debate like actually sleeping. You know, because he's not a chance to talk, you know. Or he started with this with his drink. Like there's a guy called Vinod Mehta. He died. He was an editor of Outlook. He used to always have, he used to come to his debates with a drink, you know. So Punjabi man, let me have a drink and enjoy. You know, so fun.
Because you're a comic. Okay, and I do feel a large part of a comic's career is observation and studying. Yeah. Something Zakir Khan told me that.
Yeah.
He's constantly studying everything that happens.
Correct.
And I'm sure it's the same with all comics.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, some people might say that why am I asking such a heavy question on a supposedly lighthearted podcast? But do you think we're going into a better 2020s for India?
Just generally?
Happier and economically.
Sorry, happier?
Happier and money-wise, like for overall the country.
But are these questions, how are they related in observation and this?
Like your...
Achha, my observation on this.
Huh. What's your opinion? Do you think we're heading into a happier 2020s for India?
No, I honestly, with the heart, I don't think there's too much polarization happening right now.
Polarization is the culprit.
It's a big culprit. And it's happening across. It's happening on social media. It's happening on your bloody WhatsApp groups here. You know, I'm an old person, so I'm a member of a lot of WhatsApp groups. And you see the fighting which happens before every election where they'll, you know, everybody brings out the beast in them. Family, within families. I've had friends who have told me that because he used to not support a political party, rest of the family ganged up and said, let's not call him for dinner tonight.
Wow.
Like that, you know, like a first cousin, let's not call him. He's this or he's gone to a party and his uncle has not spoken to him because of the post he put up on WhatsApp. You know? So it has become so polarizing. You know, it has become so polarizing where, you know, that's the worst part. And it happened. We saw it in America also now. You know, in America, this election last year was election year. I mean, this year, sorry, 2020 was election year. And my American friends, there's so much polarization happening. You know, either you are this or that. There's no middle ground.
Mm.
You know, either we shoot you or you're with us. It's become so... it's become so bad. It's become so toxic.
People have lost the ability to perceive gray. Now it's just everything is whitewashed or everything is completely full of darkness.
Absolutely. And what has happened is, so I think, and it's, and we have to all understand it's all driven by politics, you know. Those guys are playing such a harsh game. None of them are bloody interested about the country, you know. I came here, still I found beggars, you know, like, people without clothes, you know, asking for like 1 rupee, 2 rupees. I mean, and what are we talking about on the other end, you know?
Mm.
You're making bloody statues or thousands of crores and over here you can't, you know, give food to poor people or give basic education.
I do feel, I mean, and I'm not trying to say me versus you.
Yeah.
I do feel my generation will fix things. Like,
I would like applaud here. I'll wait because that has to be fixed, you know, and also, to a large extent, you know, you said you're apolitical. Somewhere when you'll get into the issues, now, you will see yourself...
going into one side.
You will have to get into politics. Or because once you come, that's the only way you can sort of, you know, change society on a mass level. Like, you know, and if you want to do some things only in your Wadala area where we are right now, you know, you will have to get into an ALM, area local management, maybe stand for a municipal election here within this constituency. And... like, I know there's he's a friend of mine, Asif Zakaria. Okay, he's a Congress MLA. Old friend of mine. And he's a Congress guy. But he's doing great job in Bandra. Like, you talk to any Bandra resident, he's saying he's a drink job. You call him at 12 o'clock, hey, my water is, you know, coming out of the streets. He'll come and he'll call BMC, fix it. You know, whatever, whatever. And last 8 years, sorry, BJP has been all willing. But he's the only guy, probably one of few guys winning from Congress. He's a Congress support because his dad was a Congress supporter, the same party, whatever. But I'm just saying that they are such hardworking guys who will finally people recognize. And then you see this across constituencies. You know, guys, irrespective of the political party, they still win because of the good work they are doing. And residents really want that here. They want simple, basic stuff here. You know, we are not thinking where you're taking, you know, everybody find the end of it. You want what you needs and which affect you on a daily basis. You know, if somebody's willing to solve that, if somebody doing a bad job, throw him out, get another job, get another guy. That's as simple as that, you know. So I'm glad to know that, yeah, and I want and more young people to get involved here. We need to change our country.
I mean, because you are your age and at the same time you're hanging out with people my age and stand-up comics and all, do you see a difference in mindset of the two generations and difference of capabilities also?
Yes, so I'm on one end, you know, I'm a member of all of my WhatsApp groups, you know, with all my old uncles, all in their 50s, all my friends and all that. Other end, you know, in the evening, I meet comedians or people like you. And definitely, there's a lot of, you know, very different mindset, you know. I don't know whether, you know, I need, honestly, more active participation from youngsters, more into, I wouldn't say active politics, but in some, because... if you have to change something on a national level, you know, you will have to, you know, you'll have to get yourself in the muck here to sort of change it, you know. And I don't know whether, you know, these political parties, they are, all of them are crooks, to be honest with you.
And there's barriers to entry.
Barriers to entry, there's nepotism, biggest nepotism is there, you know. And whether, you know, you always hear this, the good guy, but, you know, finally the system pulls him down. Or the system also makes him corrupt. Or the system, you know, sort of changes him. Or he finally gives up in his exasperation, is forget it, yeah. Let me go back to what I was doing. This is not my cup of tea. And it's a very dirty. And across the world, it's not only India, America, you name any country, Pakistan, whichever countries you talk about have, you know, elections, and it's the same across. So I hope it changes. I really hope it changes, because we really require the change.
Yeah, I actually think, honestly, I genuinely feel it will. I once asked Technical Guruji, who's a very big tech YouTuber. Now, he has established businesses outside of YouTube. And most YouTubers are either doing this for fame or money. Okay, and even fame, I think it reaches a saturation point at some point after you're doing your YouTube. You don't want it much after a point as a YouTuber. So I asked him, why do you do this? Why do you do so many YouTube videos? What do you enjoy? Like, what do you get out of it? And he said that somewhere I like the ability to have influence. Now, that's another way of saying, I mean, people would call this ability to have influence thing power. You gain power out of being an influencer.
Correct.
Anyone who becomes even 100,000 follower influencer on Instagram has somewhat of power in this world.
Of course.
Then I met Abhi and New. Have you heard of Abhi and New? They are those, that guy wears a red t-shirt on Instagram and he does news, like he does modern issues.
No, I'm
You might have seen their videos on Instagram.
Okay.
So we've had them on the podcast, one of our best podcasts till date. And I asked them a lot of these questions about how do you actually get in and change society through politics, because they study policy a lot and they themselves want to get into policy. But we came out with a theory on the podcast, which is that if in, like, I'm 27 now, so in 13 years, in 2033, I'll be 40 years old. So will many of the other influencers who also want to change up things. If a lot, and also keep in mind, for 13 years, we'll be doing social media. So we'll continuously accumulate people, probably even more than, or at least at the same level as cricket and Bollywood, if not more.
Yeah.
And I personally feel it might be more just because of how snowballing is happening on social media. So in 2033, maybe we'll be in a position where a lot of good social media influencers who have money to back what they want to do can get together and create a new political movement. But there have been thoughts like this. Do you think it's a possibility?
100%. It's very, and I think the people are really looking at a change, you know. You know, the fact is that, I mean, I'm again sorry talking about politics.
No, go.
But, I mean, Congress as a party, just to say, you know, it's been wiped out. But still today in some states, you know, they are winning. I mean, they won a lot of elections in the last 1 year. They won, I think, Rajasthan, they won a lot of other states. You wonder how they are so incompetent. They don't have a bloody leadership. Which also, I actually tweeted about it. It's actually, if there's a good chance. And I think in 2019, when BJP won, and the fact that, you know, BJP, for example, is I'm talking about politics because your question is political heavy. Yeah. So is that because they won and the amount of campaigning, the thousands of crores they spent, you know, honestly, if you've done a great job, you don't have to spend money. The people will still vote for you. And yet in 2019, they came back with a thumping majority. I'm saying I tweeted that time, that it's very easy now for a startup political party, you know, to do a good job, you know, to have the right people. And in 2024, you have 5 years, you can actually make a dent, you know. And but it has to be grassroots level, you know, because honestly speaking, till now, YouTube, Twitter, social media is just hardly, you know, minuscule of a population which is getting this.
And also the people who control the votes are from the interiors of the country.
Absolutely.
500 million of which are not even on social media yet.
100%. And what happens is over there, you know, today, why has fake news become so big, you know? It's a proper propaganda. It's a proper agenda, you know. One of my daughter's friends, she did a project in UP, in the villages. She's from Bombay. I think they did some project in the village of UP, where they said that those guys are uneducated. They can't read the newspaper. They don't have televisions at home. I'm talking about a small village in UP. But thanks to Jio, they all have 4G smartphones they have got. Okay. And what smartphone has? WhatsApp. And what WhatsApp has is news. So they look at that as legitimate source of news, you know. And that's why there's this IT cells of both parties, you know, just, you know, pushing the agenda, you know, four guys killed our holy mother cow in the village next to you. Will agitate any person. They think it's legit news. Maybe it's not even legit.
Mm.
Maybe, you know, they were eating goat for all you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then what happened is, in, you know, oh, this may come to our thing. Oh, four guys raped a Hindu girl. Oh, come on, get out, come on, start killing. Four Hindu guys raped a Muslim girl. It just, it is there. There's a lot of fake news. And we ourselves have been in this pandemic in Bombay. I got so many like fake news we were getting where the police had to clarify, hey, this is not, we have not made this. They said, police will not, from tomorrow, this is open, that is open. Next day, poor guy, that commissioner of police is announcing on Twitter, hey, this is all fake, you know.
Mm.
Can you imagine there's somebody out there with a laptop, you know, with a Adobe, some software, making fake news, putting Mumbai police ka logo, putting a signature there, and then having the thing to, you know, put it up on WhatsApp and then spread it across.
Mm.
And, you know, and just put it up, and then this stupid news anyway becomes viral, and within seconds, everybody in the in India has it on their WhatsApp, you know. So it's a big machinery which, you know, a lot of effort goes, you know, into that. So I think, so can you imagine, as you rightly said, that's the really problem, you know.
Mm.
But hopefully, you know, they start realizing it. But it's, you know, it's a very big problem, you know.
Mm.
Half these guys are not educated. You know, they don't, they can't reason between, I would not say really right, reason between right and wrong. They know that. But I'm saying that education really helps, you know.
Mm.
And unless I think, and I am telling you all, for most politicians, they rather keep their voter bank uneducated.
Mm.
They want to keep them poor, you know. They want to put them in that so that they never, you know, never start questioning.
Yeah. Yeah. But they may not be able to stop the internet.
100%, you know.
Mm.
But I don't know, internet will probably get curtailed for all you know, you know.
Mm.
Tomorrow for all you say, they'll say, okay, ban YouTube in India. You know, ban these exercises. They'll give on a list. Kya. Ban Ranveer, you know, he's getting too much into politics. Ban Tech Guru, ban Atul Khatri, ban comedians, you know.
Mm.
It can very well happen. It can happen, you know. I'm not saying by anybody can say. Then nobody wants, you know, dissent. You know, we'll do our stuff. We want to do this, you know.
Mm.
You know, just there was a Hyderabad, a Telangana municipal elections. Municipal, can you imagine? Like, and the top political leaders of BJP were there campaigning. So that's the kind of machinery they are putting in, willing each and every. They know they'll win this election. Next year, they'll take the Lok Sabha over there. So it's that kind of a, you know, machinery which you're fighting against, you know.
Mm.
And these are the political parties who have been there in India for the last 70 years. So you're fighting against those. I'm saying if somebody can do it, well done. I think we deserve a good opposition or a good political party which is really looking for the welfare of India without dividing people, you know.
Mm.
Really, you have these issues, I'm telling you. I mean, we're looking at today. I was reading one girl, Muslim girl, she had to abort her child because it was some Muslim couple, this love jihad thing which has started in UP, and I think they were already married, they had children also, but still they went and, you know, beat up the husband. The woman was put in some room and she like miscarried her child, you know, for all this unnecessarily. I mean, this is just, you know, it's a proper I would say propaganda which is running, and I'm not really blame BJP. Congress, they would also have done some, you know, they would have looted the country and gone away.
Mm.
So it's everybody has that, but very good if, you know, the young YouTubers and the young, you know, this tech. We should be spending more time on science, on technology, you know, these young kids, rather than, you know, sitting like bucks and, you know, and sitting and tweeting against, or sitting, or Congress is just sitting and tweeting and against it. You know, read,
yeah.
You know, improve your knowledge. You know, I think that's what, in 2020, the Time first child of the year was an Indian, Gitanjali Rao, right?
Mm.
The first Time child of the year, 2020, was an Indian girl, you know.
I feel generally when you absorb knowledge, you get a wider perspective. And mostly knowledge is spreading out in India. It's already begun in urban metros. Like if you talk to 18-year-olds of today, they're very different from even what I was.
Hmm.
Like they talk
about...
Of course. Yeah. Just because they've been loaded with information since they were children.
Correct.
They got social media in their hands when they were 4 years old.
Yeah, yeah. Actually.
So that information gives you a wider... Even though there is that social dilemma thing of polarization, this is one massive positive aspect of social media also, where it's giving you a lot of information to absorb.
Hmm.
Quick information. So, I mean, compare a 15-year-old sitting in 1980 in some village in one corner of Madhya Pradesh versus that same village in Madhya Pradesh right now. Maybe there's no development in the village, but those kids have the internet. And
100%, 100%.
So now they know about lions in Africa and they know about what happens in Canada and what happens in Japan, probably. Yeah, or at least they have access.
Yeah, you know, this is what I realized in stand-up comedy also. Like when we, for example, when you hit, like I said, I Udaipur example, where I did comedy for Udaipur. You don't have to change any references, you know. Like during my time, they were said the kids of Bombay, Delhi are much more smarter than the kids of Nagpur, for example. It's no longer the case since many years now.
Because
the internet is at a level, you know, playing field. Everybody is consuming the same content. Everybody has the same WhatsApp, same Facebook. And maybe in those smaller cities, they have more money, spending money, power than you and me in Bombay, Delhi, you know. So that is, that happened like long time back only, where we saw that, you know, information spread. Or they're also wearing the same Nike shoes. In fact, they can afford it much better than you, because here you are spending half the time in traveling, partying, this, that you have to think thrice before buying their expensive Nike. But they have probably bought it the first day, and Nike is there today. Nike is there in Nagpur, it's there in, you know, Meerut, it's there everywhere. Just to give an example of Nike as a brand, as a shoe, as a, you know. So that, like that, you know. I mean, I went to Ludhiana many years back, I think in 2013, for a show there. And they said, Coimbatore, when I was raising, the Mercedes dealer here sells more Mercedes than in Bombay. Because they have so much money, they don't know what to do. But let's buy a Mercedes, you know.
I mean, I feel that if at all a lack of an opposition is the biggest political problem in the country, and this is nothing against any political party.
No, they have dug their own grave, the other political parties. You know, it's not that we didn't give them opportunity.
But I feel this will, this information spreading out and all will create an opposition at some point, if that is the need of the hour, say in 2030s.
I really look forward to it, and you know, all the best. Seriously, I mean, I would say this should be a wake-up call to
you
all.
You know why I also say that? I mean, you can study the case of Trump and how he got elected. It was basic business and sales skills and communication skills, which I actually feel are lacking in our country. There are less sales skills, less communication skills, and less business skills. This country needs just a few, maybe 4 or 5 really sharp businessmen to enter politics and change up everything. Like, you have you seen that Bad Boy Billionaires show? So, I mean, a guy like Sahara, he definitely controlled a lot of money, but he also controlled a lot of power. He had, at his peak, I'm not talking about what eventually happened. And he did that based on good sales skills. He just knew how to sell himself and his brand and his idea. And businessmen don't enter politics because of what you said. That I don't want to get into that keechad. You know, I don't want to get my clothes dirty. But I also think that's going to change in time.
Yeah, it should change.
You know? So that's my big hope.
And as long as good people come in politics, it's always welcome, you know.
You know, I'll tell you what, I'll go as far as saying, I do believe the people at the top, even if they are good, and I read this in a book by Yuval Noah Harari, he talks about the concept of power, especially political power. Your whole reality gets morphed, where even if you go to a party with 21 of the top businessmen in the country or the top celebrities in the country, everyone wants to suck up to you because you're the one in power.
Correct.
Now, that's the 21 top celebrities in the country. Imagine what the people who work with you are treating you like. So people who work with you are treating you like, you are the shit. I will do anything for you. So it morphs, no matter who you are, it morphs your own mind as well.
100%.
So I feel that even if the people at the top have good intent and they have, you know, these dreams for India, it's all the layers under them that end up corrupting their mindset.
Maybe.
Or corrupting the country. All the negatives you speak about, any political party, may not be the guy at the top. It may be all the layers under it. And but we, because I mean, that some particular person is the face of a particular political party, all the blame goes on a Rahul or a Modi.
Correct.
So anyway, that's...
I totally agree with you. I agree with you here, because I genuinely feel that Modi ji must be having a great sense of humor. He's talked about sense of humor many a times, you know. This is the third or fourth time he's talked about it, but it's the bucks around him, the, you know, this people who layer up that, you know, power, give him so much this, that, you know. And it's not that Modi has just come in, he has worked hard for it. He's been a political party from RSS and from years. You know, it's not that he just rose up one day and said, hey, I'm the king, you know.
I do appreciate that he is gutsy. Like, he will do, even if it's a miscalculated move, he will try doing something gutsy. What I don't appreciate is obviously the lack of inclusion and all that's happening in our country lately.
This is all planned. It's a part of a bigger agenda, you know, which maybe the extreme right wing is forcing on him. And then you're swimming with the sharks, then you have to swim with them. You can't say no to them.
India needs more political podcasts. You never know.
Let's talk too much politics. Let's change the subject. Let's talk about sex.
I was about to say, let's talk about sex. How does sexuality change as you grow older, though?
What is that? What is sex? Yeah,
sir. Like, how does... Years.
No, I'm just joking. No.
we do talk about sex a lot on this podcast.
Okay, great. Let's talk about it.
How does it... And the reason I'm asking you this is, I was with a friend last week who... He's 20. He's 26. He's younger than I am. Not taking care of his body at all. Never taken care of his body. He's not out of shape completely, but just smokes like a chimney, drinks like a fish.
Huh.
And then, like, you know, also eats a lot of junk. He's starting to get erectile dysfunction type issues at 26.
Oh.
Like, khada nahi hota basically. And I'm just like, how did this happen? Because, and most of my other friends are all really fit. Play football. Everything's working great. But I also see a whole section of guys on that other front. So one, I'm sure when you get older, you see a lot of your own friends with ED and things like that.
Yeah.
But how does sexuality change for a guy, like, going forward?
Actually, I think, first of all, let me talk for myself. I don't think it has changed any bit. That's what till today. I mean, I don't have any ED issues.
No, but you see people around you?
We don't discuss it. I think guys will never...
Guys, my eyes discuss it.
Okay. At least my friends will never say, hey, yaar, khada nahi hota. You know, they'll never say that, you know. I'll just chup-chup, hila ke so ja phir. What can I tell him? But no, but I'm just saying that... I think guys, we don't discuss. Maybe, you know... like women, I know my women friends, like my wife's friends, they talk a lot about their sexual lives among each other and the kitty parties and this and that and all
like
that.
Like what? Like, because I'm assuming... I mean, I understand you talk about your sexual life in your 20s when you're not married and it's different.
Hmm.
But how do you talk about your sexual life in your 40s? And
I have had like... So, I'll tell you what. In this old age, you have these couple kitty parties. Hmm. Okay. Where all couples get together. And what used to happen, this is a true story. And I was a member at one time. Now I've stopped all this. Like this I'm talking about like pre my comedy days. Now I've stopped all these kitty parties. But... So before I used to attend a lot of this couple kitty parties. Usually they're, you know, parents of your children, same school. So you have a school couple kitty group. Then you'll have a neighborhood kid. Then you have some friends you grew up with. That special couple kitty. And you meet once a month in somebody's house or a restaurant. It's just like a fixed dinner. So you look forward to it because you're eating somewhere, nice place. You know, if we book a restaurant, we'll all go there. And what used to happen is like, as soon as you enter, all the guys are on one side, all the women are on one side.
Hmm.
And you go to the guy side in the fucking most boring side. Everybody either dissing Modi or a Rahul Gandhi or is talking about his new BMW. Like in one of the couple kitty parties, I realized that a friend bought a BMW car and I never knew till then because, you know, that BMW doesn't give you or one of these German car manufacturers don't give you a spare tire. And I said, why? You see, no, they're only... I'm a Maruti owner and a Fiat car owner and always you had that extra, that Stepney in your dicky. You see, no, because these new cars, there's a puncture, it can still drive for 100 kilometers so that you reach a place and you repair a thing. So I realized that. So when I bought a new BMW, but I had to pay for the extras, you know, like so many thousand. So I learned all these. So they're all boring talk happening there. But once you come on the women's side, where all the ladies say, all the nice gossip and masala and this used to happen. So I used to always spend 5 minutes and then go and sit with the ladies and get a lot of material from them, you know, like what they talk, everybody bitching their mother-in-law or their teacher or the school or things like that. So that was my fun part of this. But sexuality definitely changes. You know, you definitely, your libido does come down. I mean, that's the way it has to be, you know, explained. And, but still, I think it's, I think as long as you're physically fit, there's a lot of this with physical fitness, definitely. You know, I remember I ran the Mumbai Marathon for 13 years, half marathon, and you every day practicing. And your libido fucking goes through the roof, you know. I mean, I used to write about it, you know, like, I was just like, you reach the finish line, you're just wanting to bloody come.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can say this.
No, you can.
Like, because you're exercising so much and you're eating the right stuff and, you know, you're doing weight training and things like that. That definitely sort of keeps your, you know, health. This now, in our old age group, 52 and all, now these, you know, you hear these messages like, you must jerk off every day to keep your prostate so that you don't have prostate cancer when you're old. You know, so, so you get all these messages. So the messages have changed, you know.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I think guys will still be guys. Yeah.
What the guys your age who... maybe not at the peak level of happiness. What is causing that lack of happiness? Is it that not being in the correct job, guys, women, whatever, men and women?
I don't know. I've really not. I think people who are not happy is,
Do you have friends who are unhappy?
I'm sure. I think I've never. They've not really expressed. Yeah, I don't know.
Do you sense?
Maybe, you know, guys of my generation, we don't open up too much, you know, to each other. Like, nobody will come up and say, hey, dude, I mean, he's very, very close to me. And still, he will be very skeptical of telling me, hey, dude, I'm having a financial problem, you know. He'll think that maybe he's coming to me to ask for help or things like that. But generally, what you hear, what you see, you know, people have lost their jobs. Like, I know 2-3 of my friends who have lost their jobs in this pandemic. Obviously, they must be unhappy, but they've never come to me and say, hey, dude, I'm unhappy about it. But I think what bothers people is that, obviously, job security, financial security, I think these are the main two issues which are there, which really, you know, bother people my age, and rightfully.
Could be marriage?
I think if they were unhappy, they would have been separated now. Like I'm married for 27 years now, you know, happily married. And I'm saying if somebody would have been unhappy, they would have probably had the differences. Yes, people do have unhappy marriages also. But during our time, you know, I think that the problem was, I think, which is not there in current generation, if you're really comparing this, is that there, I think there was too much pressure from family, from society to, you know, still sort of power through a bad marriage, you know. And so that log kya kahenge, or it'll affect children or things like that. I think today rightfully I'm saying that if you don't get on with a partner, you know, within 3-4 years, 5 years, even though if you have had a child, you can maybe separate and say, hey, okay, let's, you know, I'll take care of the child, but let's separate or whatever. You know, you can have that arrangement, a financial arrangement, and whatever the other arrangements are there. I think that in today's generation, I think that acceptance, it's a bad in a way because divorce rates are going up and, you know, it affects the child and things like that. That time, I don't know what is right. I think even going through a bad marriage and, you know, being unhappy for 26, 27 years, living with a partner which you don't like, or you don't sleep also with the partner because you just don't want to, you know, that you lost all the connection. But still you have to power through it because her parents are alive, your parents are alive, and you think, fuck, it's too late in life now to, you know, sit and separate and go through the divorce settlements and this like that. Even that is bad. It's better to, you know, split right now and this. Like, I remember I came to know this was in 2016. I went to the UK to perform. And I have this, you know, all we have these marriage jokes, how my wife troubles me and this and that. And it kills in India, but didn't kill there. You know, it didn't do well at all. And I asked the comedian, fellow comedian, saying, yeah, because here the audience is wondering, if you're so fucking unhappy with your wife, don't sit on stage and fucking complain. Leave her. Marry somebody else, you know. So they don't get that perspective. How a guy for 27 years is married or 25 years is married and still talking about how his wife doesn't, you know, treat him properly, or how it, you know, they have this, whatever. They fucking just leave her and go, yeah, start your new life. Why the fuck are you on stage complaining and whining about it? So that's, cultures are different, you know. You have to understand the culture of a city where you go to perform also, or the country where you perform.
I've actually met your wife at Soho House once.
Yes, yeah.
Super positive vibe, just like you. Selfish question here. I've been thinking a lot about marriage lately, and I'm single right now. But if the right person comes along, I'd love to date for a while and then get married. And honestly, I feel, at least from the outside, and I've never spoken to you about your marriage, but I feel like you guys have a great equation with each other. Like, you know, you're all best friends and all. Is that the reason why it's worked? And what advice do you have for young guys who are thinking about getting married?
So first of all, I had a love marriage. So I fought against my parents' wishes and got married to my wife.
Is your wife not Sindhi?
She's not Sindhi. She's Punjabi.
Okay.
Even though Sindhi Punjabi is like more or less similar, still my parents wanted me to have an arranged marriage. And I had like fought with them for 1 year. My parents didn't talk to me for close to 6 months. And then one fine day, they reconciled and said, okay, yeah, get married to her. So, and we were going on for like 2-3 years. Then I told my parents, they didn't agree. Then for 6 months, this entire thing went. My parents were not talking to me. And then finally, one day, they came and said, okay, fine. And then we got married and things like that. And and that time was a time where also, you know, I mean, just to cover that point, I was not financially independent. You know, I just got out of college and got into work and things like that, and, you know, joined this, my brother's business, and, you know, this computer thing. So I was not financially, I was like, okay, to hell with you, I'm leaving home and, you know, going, you know. Maybe those are not the times where you could do that. Maybe now you can, Nowadays, I've seen kids like by the time they start earning, they say, "Dad, mom, even I'm moving to a house 3 buildings away from you, but I want my space."
Mm.
You know, the space thing and all that time, you know, we didn't have the balls or we didn't have the thing to also tell our parents about it. So you have to basically keep them happy somehow, you know, and say that this. So yeah, so it was a love marriage and yeah, we've been best of friends and still today, like we can't think of a holiday without each other. Like, you know, we may say, "Oh, I need like this pandemic." We are, like my wife said, and I'm because I travel a lot because of comedy. And the 8 months I've been at home, and after one time she said, "Listen, I'm sick of you. Just go somewhere. Or I want a solo holiday." You know, I said, "Yeah, go take it." And then she started suggesting, "You also come along with me." "How the hell you want a solo holiday?" He said, "No, you be in the room. I'll be in the room. We won't talk to each other, but come with me." You know, so we've had our ups and downs, we've had our fights, we've had our issues, but somehow down the line, we have sort of reconciled and we've also grown as individuals, you know, and trying to say that, maybe I think as husbands, you tend to say, "Okay, fuck it, yeah, let's not fight, you know, finally it'll affect your own sex life, you know, she's the sole provider, so why the hell do you have to fight with your, you know, you don't mess around with your dealer, you know?" So yeah, I think that was, and I'm just joking here, but yeah, so I think, so if you find a right person who you feel, you know, and it's like today the things have changed where you can live with her, you know, like your parents might say, "Okay, yeah, spend some time together." Her parents may say, you know, things have changed, you know, like, I'm sure your dad, mom must be very cool about it. Like, you know, they're from Bombay, they'll say, "Yeah, okay, spend some time with her, you know, go for a holiday together, see yourself out." Because they also don't want you to, you know, and her parents would not want you to find a wrong partner. Then after 3 years, 4 years, you know, because what is happening is also, let me tell you, people, you know, I think earlier the tolerance levels were more, you know. Like if your mother-in-law would have said, "Beta, kya khana banaya tumne?" I'm being a little dramatic and filmy here. And, "Mama, sorry, kal se main apna haath thik karungi, I'll make better, I'll go through a cookbook." Today, if the mother-in-law says, "Beta, kya kar, fuck you, mother, show the middle finger, jaake Zomato mein order karo, main yahi khaunga, ye main aise banaungi," right? So tolerance levels, and of which is rightfully, you know, your mother-in-law come and give and tell you, now the mother-in-law has to change. So yeah, so I'm just saying it's good, spend some time with her, if you filed, you know, and one more thing you have to realize that you as an individual, even though you're smarter than what, as a 27-year-old, you're much more smarter than what I was when I was 27. You've seen more life, you have, you know, read more, you have been through more. The times have changed. Internet has maybe changed, as you said. But at the end of it, you may have to definitely make adjustments. So don't be a fucking dick that time and say, "Okay, I'm not going to change this, you know. I don't want to lose my freedom." Obviously, your freedom will get curtailed once you have children. You can't go for that boys' night out, which used to do a football night out. If your child is crying with your wife, if he's got a, you know, and children at the right time, they will get this something called peptic, where they have something in their stomach, and the children just start crying for fucking no rhyme or reason. And then I say, "It's peptic. Can you give them some, it used to be called something. It was some old medicine, Dr. Pardiwala, some peptic, something you put. And then after half an hour, child stops, you know, and then you have to realize it's got peptic. You know, so I'm just saying these things will happen. That time you feel like taking a pillow and, you know, strangling your child, but no. And that has happened many a times, you know, where we used to make plans and say, "Hey, tonight we're partying and all that." And that bloody evening, your child comes with a running stomach and crying, and you know, you have to take care of the child. You know, you can't leave him with him or her with a maid. So all these things, you have to be prepared for those changes. You have to prepare to grow up a little bit, accept it, live with each other, and then power through the things. And not at the first instant, "Okay, fuck it, you fuck off, chalo, bye bye, tata, ho gaya." No. Work through it, you know. And then, yeah, definitely do get married. Yeah.
And the reason I asked...
Ladies on this podcast, he's a very handsome guy. He's a lovely new student in Wadala. So please.
happy to quote any Punjabis or Sindhis. This is almost the same thing.
Whatever,
the Punjabi-Sindhi equation seems to have worked. So I'm glad. Atul Khatri, thank you for sharing your happiness, man. I feel you're genuinely one of the happiest people I know.
Thank you so much.
So really, it was an honor having you on the show. And I'm going to link your handles down below.
Thank you, Ranveer. Thank you so much. All the best. Take care.